Regular discussion meeting of the Public Facilities Committee, Wednesday, January 4th, 2012. Present at the meeting from the start is Alderman Crosley, Alderman Laredo, and welcome aboard to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
We have Alderman Lappin, Alderman Sandberg, Alderman Albright, Committee Clerk Shauna, and myself, Alderman Salvucci. First item. The 380-11 is honor the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend a sum of $485,000 from bond and indebtedness for the purpose of funding masonry repairs at various schools. Now, you all might remember why this came back, but if you look at the back of your agenda, you'll see that it's all broken down as to what, for and where, and what it costs for each item. Josh did a good job for us on that. So if there's any discussion on this, if you want to look at the cost sheet, it's in the back of CSF, please, 380-11.
Mr. Chairman, may I just ask a question?
Go right ahead.
The Bigelow stairs, I know, have been an issue for some time, as I know the chair is well aware. This is for design and
just
design.
I was just about to say, we wanted to make a correction. That it is just designed for the $35,000. That is not design and construction.
And do we have any idea what the construction might cost? Even
we are carrying as a placeholder at this point $350,000. And this is really, if you look at this historically, there's been a lot of temporary repairs over the years. We're really looking to address the root cause of the damage over there, and that ultimately is the drainage and the heaving, the frosties beneath it. So. But there's a lot of questions as to layout and how the entrance should look and work and function. So that's why we want to make sure that we're doing this right. And it's also why we're funding it in two phases and two fiscal years, so that we have a chance to meet with the school department and really do this the right way.
Excuse me. We are now joined by Alderman Lennon.
Sorry I'm late, Mr.
Chairman. Sorry.
Your first meeting
right,
was jammed. I apologize.
No problem.
We already took the picture, Your Honor.
Yes,
go ahead. I was going to say good luck to Mr. Laredo.
Well, we welcome him over the world.
He did that.
All right. We're back. I know, he's jumping right in with both feet. Huh?
So, $350 or so for a placeholder for the new stairs?
Yes.
And that will be next fiscal year?
Next fiscal year, yes.
And how long will it take to do that kind of construction, any idea?
The project development will determine timeline, but I would anticipate...
Go ahead. Just let him finish this.
And I think I know where you're going with this. It's not going to be a summer project. It's going to require coordination with the schools, and that's part of the reason why we're phasing this over two fiscal years. We're going to have to discuss, potentially, you know, an alternate main entrance during the construction timeline. Obviously, we utilize the summer, but it may pour into or start during.
May I just continue, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sure.
So
we're on this one subject, but Josh has a presentation to give us.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fire code violations and access, if you're doing construction over during the school year, you're going to presumably deal with all that?
Specifically?
I mean, you're cutting off access to one.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, no. We'd have to involve fire and ISD, inspection services, to make that happen. And all of those are great points, and that's why we really phased it over 2 years. It may look simple, but it's going to require some planning.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No.
Thanks.
I'm going to hold my question until after Josh
is finished.
And if I still have it, I'll take my place as the first question.
All right.
Okay. We did break these down, not only a brief description of what the project is, but also breakdown on the estimated cost. As stated, the total project cost is $485,000. The majority of this work, as you can see, $250,000, is at the Ward School. This will be the second phase of the repairs to the masonry at that building. We anticipate that this, at the end of this phase, we will have the envelope fairly tight. We'll have the envelope tight. It doesn't mean that it's final, that we've completed the entire building, but it's going to put us in a much better spot. It will stop the water infiltration, which is ultimately what we're really looking to do here. I know that the question came up the last time about, you know, our plan and our approach. The designer in this case has made sure that as we do this, not only are we phasing it financially, but we're phasing it in a way that when we complete an area, we can call that area complete, not just, you know, Band-Aids here and there throughout the building. We're really focusing on, let's get this side of the building, because it's the worst, completely tight, and then we'll move on to the next side of the building, and so on and so forth. In addition to that, we're addressing some of the projects, or some of the issues that are there, such as stairs that need to be rebuilt, egress, that kind of stuff, from a masonry standpoint. So we're addressing all of that as part of this. This will also, by doing this work, it will allow us to start addressing the interior needs. It doesn't make much sense to scrape and paint and replaster areas if you still have water leaking going on. So as we're doing these projects, as we're doing these phases, it allows us to systematically address the interior spaces, which not only present a health issue with the water infiltration and the moist environment, but also aesthetically. It just by allowing us to really address these, it just gives a better feeling to the building. One of the worst areas when you walk into the Ward School is actually, if you're facing the main office, it's right up behind you, right at the top of the stairs where the water's coming down. So, it's kind of the face of the building that, it just gives a bad impression. So that's the Ward School. And I'll go through all four of these, and then you guys can ask questions, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. The Bowling School, this is designed. One of the things I wanted to state on this is it's a little unclear in the description here. It appears as though it's design and construction. The $35,000 is just design. Sorry, $25,000 is just design. I took the verbiage out of the CIP. I didn't want people to think that we were deviating from the CIP. But this one, as well, similar to the Bigelow, is a phased approach. This is to identify and design the project. We know that there's water infiltration into the learning spaces. We're looking to identify what the root cause is and correct it. We don't anticipate the size or scope of the work required at the Bigelow School, but again, we don't want a band-aid. I mean, we could go in and we could skim coat the wall where it's coming in, but you're not addressing the water infiltration issue, you're just band-aiding it. So we want to get to the root cause there.
Can I ask a question about the Bowling?
Sure.
Is it in the new, the old, not the, it's not, is it the new part or the old part that you're worth looking at?
It's in the old part of the building.
Okay, good.
Right in. Yeah. Okay, the Ed Center and Underwood School masonry repairs. I'm going to talk about the Underwood School, but Mike, where you're the user, it might be even better if you want to describe the impact it's having on you guys at the Ed Center. The Underwood, if you're facing it from the Newton Corner side of the building, if you look up right to the left-hand side, right up kind of where the decorative, I think it's sandstone up at the top, we're getting water infiltration where that meets the masonry and the mortar joints. And you can actually see it in the back stairwell right by the, I think it's a special education wing, just beyond the library, kind of on the gym side of the building. The water's come in, and it's actually, we just had to do abatement because it popped all the floor tiles. So it's not unlike with Ward and portions of the Ed Center, this is an acute issue. It's not a systemic issue. We're not having to go through and address a lot of issues at Underwood. It's just this one thing. It's more than we can handle, via maintenance, but it's something that warrants some capital repair. And once we have this done, because there aren't any other masonry issues in the building, we'll have a nice solid envelope. So,
in addition, we've spent some money over at Underwood the last 5 years or so. We've done that parapet work that he's talking about up the top right below the same, that little be limestone, that brick 5-foot course. We pointed that a couple of years ago. And we've done a bunch of window work. So right below some windows, we've had some infiltration of water that cut into the school, especially the little classrooms, the K classrooms that stick out. If you look at Underwood, the front door, the far left-hand classroom, that stack, we've done a bunch of water work over there as well. So the building's not in bad shape, but there are a couple spots that still need to be attended to.
And then the Ed Center, I don't know if you want to...
So the Ed Center, if you are standing in the big parking lot with your back to Crafts, and you look at the green door, which is kind of like the human resources entry door, there's how the building kind of juts in a little bit. That's kind of the HR area. That flat face there, you can see some of the courses peeling off the building. Mm-hmm. Needs to be addressed. It's been like that a few years. And then further down where the springboard operates their classrooms up there, there's some water infiltration coming in. Same thing. We've just got some loose board that needs to be taken care of. The one by human resources is probably the more pressing.
Just a point of clarification, when you say the bricks are peeling off the building, the bricks?
Yeah, you can see some of the
they're bowed.
Yeah.
They're bowed, so are you needing to put stars in there or something? What are you doing?
I'm going to assume that they'll probably tie it back to the structure.
Yes.
So they'll pull the courses
off, stars.
Tie it back to the structure.
Okay.
They're going to
And then the Bigelow main entrance stair, this is just the design. And again, we kind of talked about that in the beginning. I won't rehash. Are there questions on these projects? Or do you want me to go through all of the projects and then?
Let's just take one item.
Okay, all right, good.
That's item number 380-11. Any other questions?
On the masonry. Every other, all the points that I was going to ask about have been answered, except on the amount where it says the $25,000 is design only. The total amount would be $275,000 because it says design would be 10% of the total, which would be $250,000, but that the contingency is built into that, not extra?
Correct.
Okay.
Matt, anything else?
Cheryl first.
Excuse me. I don't want to get anyone to take that off. There we go. The $350,000 for construction for Bigelow and whatever Bowen is going to cost after we do the design, is that money in 2013?
Yes.
And that same amount, I don't have my book.
In Bowen?
$350 for Bigelow.
$350 is for Bigelow, and we have $60 right now for Bowen.
$60.
But as we get into the investigation work, we'll clarify whether that's the right amount.
It's hard to tell without really doing some, you know, I think really what we're going to need to do is potentially do a little boring right outside the parking lot to get a sense as to what is happening down there. Mm-hmm. Once we determine what's actually happening, this may be a fairly small repair. We don't want to make that assumption now, but we want to make sure we're doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm. And if that comes out to be more than $60,000, we're going to go back to the Finance Committee for more.
Oh, sir.
Well, we have to come back. We're probably asking for the time.
Yeah, right. Later.
Yes.
And I just want to say I appreciate the breakout of the work and the money.
Oh, great. Yeah, and just on that point, too, we did meet ahead of time. Just so that everybody knows, what we're looking to get towards is a nice standardized format for this backup material where we know what needs to be presented, and you guys are used to seeing it every day, so it'll make it a little easier for both sides.
Thank you.
Good.
Well, I just got stuck on when you said it will be almost complete when you were talking about the Ward School. And actually, I'd like to ask that question in the framework of what the design documents look like. So the Ward School masonry repairs have already been designed. So does that mean we have a bunch of elevations with arrows and circles and descriptions and so on and so forth of the work?
Yep.
And do we have an on-call architect or engineering company?
Yes, we do.
Is it like a Gale Associates who's doing this?
That one is.
Or someone like that?
Yeah,
okay.
They are historic and envelope.
Okay.
That's their...
So it's an engineering outfit?
They're actually an architectural.
They're an architectural.
But all of the architectural outfits are required to have engineers.
In-house.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know we were talking about this a little earlier ahead of the meeting, but I think it would be helpful to get back to that point where you said this will be almost complete. Mm-hmm. To see some kind of a drawing that shows scope.
Yep.
You know, and so then you could identify if it's most of the job, most of the building, what we're not able to do, or if it's just a piece of the building.
Yeah, and when I say almost complete, I don't want to say that we've repointed the Ward School, because there are areas of the Ward School that don't necessarily require it. They're in good shape. They may be old, but the mortar joints are good.
But I really appreciate
what you're saying. Yeah.
Okay.
Mark, two, maybe three questions. Small question. Do we put this out as a single bid or in multiple bids for different schools?
In a situation like this, we normally will confer with the procurement agent to determine what the best procurement method is. You know, there's two trains of thought. One is that you get economy of scale when you put it all out as one. Others are that, you know, some of these smaller masonry projects, a smaller company that does not have a high DCAM rating could potentially do this work and do it great at a much lower cost. So sometimes you don't want to eliminate the little guy, but, you know, so we have to weigh both those options.
But I guess my only I don't have any expertise in this, but I presume procurement people and you sit down and discuss that and weigh the pros and cons of the two.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Second question relates to the Edge Center. I appreciate that work needs to be done there. I'm fully supportive of it. But what's the big picture, long-term thought process for how the Edge Center is used and designed? Is the Edge Center, it's a converted school. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense to be have that building as the Edge Center? Should we be thinking about a different type of structure for essentially what our office is for the Edge Center? And, you know, how does putting money into something every year play into that?
I think that's a little off what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I'll stay off that then.
Yeah, that's another day.
Okay, I'll be happy to defer.
That's another subject.
Can we get you one way or another? Yeah, exactly, so you've got to accept the envelope.
What I thought, just very briefly, is it's a city asset that we want to preserve, and the building envelope is really
critical
to make sure that the interior stays intact.
This is a temporary situation, I can appreciate that, but there's no plans yet that I've heard of where the Ed Center's going or what we're going to do.
Mike, I wasn't quarreling or questioning with the idea of preserving the envelope. It was to simply try to tee up a much bigger question about putting resources into a building that may be best used for other things. But I understand, Mr. Chairman, that's not what we're discussing this evening. I'll defer.
Is there any other questions on this item? Do I have a motion?
I'll move.
Moved by Alderman Lappin. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay, next. 379-11. His Honor the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend the sum of $450,000 in bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding mechanical upgrades at various schools. And here again, Josh has brought it down. Josh?
Okay, we have two schools up. This is the Mason Rice School and the Lincoln Elliott School. Mason Rice School, two boilers are both 59 years old. Lincoln Elliott School, two boilers are both 46 years old. The Mason Rice School, the boiler that we'll be replacing, has three failed sections in the rear of the boiler. It still functions, but obviously it's not functioning optimally. Not only will that address that issue, but it will also give us a reliable, efficient boiler in that building. As you guys are thinking, we do an awful lot of boilers in the city of Newton. The short answer is we have a lot of boilers in the city of Newton. We have a lot of old boilers in the city of Newton. But what we're seeing is we're getting towards the end of the first round where you have one new boiler in each school. And then we can start going back in a less urgent manner, going back and doing the other boilers. So I don't want to stop, certainly, because then we'll get to where we were in the first place. But there is an end in sight, or at least a target. Lincoln Elliott School, same thing. You got two boilers there, both beyond the useful life, had issues, currently have issues. Both of these boilers in both locations are leaking, so not only are we losing steam and water, but we're having to make up that water, so it's killing us on energy, it's killing us on water. It creates a more corrosive environment, which decreases the life of the equipment. In both of these cases, these are steam boilers, so we are, it's not an opportunity to go to a condensing type boiler. When we do hot water systems, we'll be looking to do condensing type boilers. We've been working with utility companies to look at their rebate programs for the hot water plants that we have out there. There's some really good programs for these boiler replacements. So what we're looking at on both of these boilers, you're looking at low 80s in efficiency rating, sometimes high 70s, all the way up into the upper 80s, which is not optimal, but in a steam system, that's kind of the best you can do. In addition to what we're doing that will only help this, is you're replacing the burner, so you normally get about a 5% increase in efficiency. Depending on the burner, sometimes 10%. You're replacing the boiler itself, which is less mass, it's less metal to heat up, so that typically is a 5% increase in efficiency. And then you're also doing insulation in all of these schools. Many of the schools have either no, inadequate, or poor insulation on the pipes. This leads to issues where we can get overheating in the spaces above as well. So not only will it help with the efficiency of the system, but it will also help with the operational capacity of the building as well. So that's that.
So.
Okay, let's have Vicki first.
Have we converted our boilers to gas, or are we in the process of doing that?
We got a couple left. If you're talking schools, I believe we have four left. If you're talking city buildings, there's a lot. Because we have a lot of outbuildings where they're nowhere near gas. Mm-hmm. And if it's, you know, if they're burning, you know, 200 gallons a year, mm-hmm. the, you know, there's not a lot of incentive to change those over. But in both these cases, I've already contacted the gas department, and they are going through their engineering phase to determine if it's feasible. If they can always get you gas, the question is, how much is it going to cost us? In some cases, they provide incentives. Other cases, it's a wash. And in some cases, they say it's going to cost you a lot of money, because if their infrastructure can't support it and they got to replace all the lines in the street, you know, it's expensive. So.
If the lines are already there and the capacity is there, do we save money in general? I know gas is cleaner. Is it also cheaper than oil?
Certainly. Right now, the gas equivalent is just over $2 a gallon, and oil is getting pretty close to $4. We're locked in right now in the high threes, but either way, at this point, it's a no-brainer. But separate from that, I mean, you got the reduction in emissions, you got it's a much more maintenance-friendly product. I mean, there's a million reasons why we would love to convert. So.
I have Cheryl next.
How long are we locked in at 3-4?
The co-op goes out every year, so, and then they go out again, I think, in the spring, but the rates don't change until July 1.
Okay. It's interesting that this is exactly split in half, but they're different numbers. I see the asbestos is less at Mason Rice.
Yep, so that's a great point. So the asbestos at Mason Rice, I think about 10, 12 years ago, the building department did a project over there where they abated most of that boiler room. So we did keep some money in there, but that's mainly for the asbestos that might be encountered when they actually demo the boiler. You got the ropes, and then every once in a while they hide a surprise underneath the boiler with the previous insulation that they throw in there many, many decades ago. So we carry some money there. But on the other side, Lincoln Elliott, it hasn't been abated, so there's going to be more cost there. So they kind of work out. Some things are going to be more, some things are going to be less.
And what's the difference? Why is it less insulation at Lincoln Elliott than Mason Rice?
Just based on size. Each boiler room is different. The boiler room at Mason Rice is significantly larger than the boiler room at Lincoln Elliott. It's just a tighter boiler room. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Scott.
Just along that, I had the same question, Josh. But in terms of the process of the abatement, how does that work?
I'll do the quick down and dirty. So we notify the state. You have to give 2 weeks notification. That goes to the health department. Health department gets notified. School department gets notified. The way we have been doing it is on a 3-11 shift with notification that goes to the principal and the teachers. It's worked out great. Especially with the way our buildings are constructed, the boiler rooms have an exterior door. So in many cases, if we hadn't told them, they wouldn't even know they were there.
Right. This is wondering about, I'm sure if it's happened in other schools, how others have dealt with, you know, concerns about abatement.
They tap the whole room, floor to ceiling, duct tape it in, put it on a negative pressure.
And
the
air monitor.
All right,
so if something does get directed, I can call one of you guys. And just,
yeah. And every once in a while we get questions. Normally, believe it or not, it's like in the after school programs. Somebody steps in, they don't know, they missed it, whatever. And I think it's happened twice since I started here, and in both cases, one of us was very quick to kind of let them know what was going on.
Thank you, Susan.
So what's the lifetime of these new boilers?
The new boilers, if you maintain them well, they say 20 to 25 years. Keep in mind, that's what the manufacturer is willing to kind of put their name on. It's not a warranty, obviously, but that's what they're willing to say. You know, it's all about maintenance. You know, when I was in the Navy, we had condensate pumps that, you know, were 65 years old. Their life expectancy was 10 years, but they were maintained very well. So it varies, but that's there.
So it just feels like with 15 or how many schools, 20 schools that we have, that we ought to just plan on seeing boilers being replaced every year. I mean, we have the oldest ones, and then going to come around to the newer ones needing replacement again.
Yep. I think what you might get to, though, is a point at which you're not doing two schools a year. Mm-hmm. You might get down to one school
right.
a year. That's where I think, and ultimately it's not going to, I hate to say, it's not going to mean that you're spending less money on schools, it just means you'll be spending more on roofs,
right.
masonry.
Right. Great.
Thanks. So I'm just wondering how quickly this project can move forward and when you're planning installation, because you'd really like to get this one underway fairly soon.
Yeah. I would anticipate design in, you know, February, when, you know, as this goes through finance, money should be available in February. Design occurs in February and March, with bidding, construction in late spring.
Okay, so is it a summer bidding and construction in late spring?
We could start in the spring.
While the kids
at that
school.
Point, the only thing that may change that is that, you know, if it's ready to go in the spring, it may not be worth the coordination for abatement in the spring. If we're close enough to the summer, we may just wait to do the abatement when nobody's around.
Okay, thank you.
You mentioned maintenance a moment ago. Assuming we go forward with this, do you have other plans in place and do you have the resources to provide the necessary maintenance as you see it being appropriate?
Yep, we do an annual. We have a structured annual maintenance program on all of our boilers now. This is done through the service contractor. The other thing that we've been working with the school department on is the service contractors have been educating, or not educating, but, you know, brushing up the custodians on the latest and greatest maintenance methods with the boilers. The custodians don't do a ton of it, but there's kind of the simple day-to-day tasks where you're blowing down mud drums and, you're, you know, simple things like that, what to look for on different things. So the answer is yes, we have a very structured program on the boiler, on the boilers.
Yes. Any other discussion?
Yeah, there's only one L in Lincoln Elliott.
Oh, all right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, next one.
Last one.
378-11. It's on the mayor requesting authorization for appropriate expend the sum of $315,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding the emergency generator upgrades at various schools. And here we are again, 378.
All right, one of the things I'd like to point out right off the bat is the, I just want to make sure everybody's clear, on the $150,000 for the Ed Center generator, this is additional funding for a project that was from 2008. This is one that's taken a little bit of time. So when the engineer went in and did an evaluation of the existing system at the Ed Center, not only was the boiler old, as we could very well tell, but there was an inadequate emergency distribution system in the Ed Center that they determined once they got in there. Not inadequate in that it was not providing life safety, but inadequate in that because of the way that the Ed Center is used as a central hub for administration, it's necessary to back components up, such as the server room, such as the air conditioning that supports the server room. In addition to this, what they identified was that based on code requirements and some code changes, that we needed to have exit signs and emergency lighting tied in, or battery backup in this case. So the scope did change a little bit, and we genuinely feel that it will better meet the needs of the city. The Ed Center really is the backbone for communication for the school, so we need to make sure that we have that protected. So that was that piece. Then I'll talk about the Burr and the Bigelow. Burr and Bigelow emergency generators, both greater than 50 years old. We are going to be making a kind of a change in the way we do things. We met with Fire and Wires and ISD, the commissioners and the fire inspectors, to discuss emergency generators and really life safety in the schools. There's a couple different trains of thought. One is that you can have a, you know, a true emergency generator in every building, but code requirements are changing, and what they're saying is that if you're going to do that, you need to have an emergency generator that is housed independently, has a transfer switch that can transfer in less than 10 seconds, and a slew of other requirements. And what that means is it can be done, but it's very, very costly. So in both of these cases, these generators are not in their own enclosures, so they would need to be completely reconstructed with where they're placed. So what we decided in meeting with everybody together is, and this is really the way that most cities and towns and other organizations are moving, is going towards battery backup for exit signs, emergency wall pack lights for emergency lighting, and then your generator is not an emergency generator per se, not classified as an emergency generator. It's more a convenience generator. You're picking up your boiler, your heat, minimal lighting, that kind of stuff. So what this allows us to do is it downsizes the emergency generator significantly. It makes it a more readily available emergency generator, less expensive to purchase. We're not decreasing quality, it's just a smaller generator. It also makes it easier to find people that can work on it. It makes the repair, you know, the parts less expensive and easier to obtain. It's just that with the very large generators that we had historically, they're tough to maintain. They're expensive to maintain. Each manufacturer wants their own tech to maintain these things. So what you end up having is that you can go to an emergency generator company to try to get service, but then they want to sub it out to somebody else. And if they're subbing out, then they're going to charge you more. So really they're trying to take a more simple approach on how we do emergency power in the buildings. So in both these cases, they're beyond useful life, and we're looking to make these changes.
Questions? Scott?
Josh, so this says to complete the work, and this was a 2008 project?
Yes.
So we started the work in 2008?
It was started.
We appropriated $150,000, and now we're looking for the balance?
No.
To finish the project?
The balance is $150,000. If you look at the cost estimate.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it was $300,000, basically. We started the project in 2008.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Right. Yes. So I thought you meant exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
You're looking for the other $150,000.
Yeah.
So obviously there was certain aspects that needed to be done, and now you need code requirements and things like that to get it up to speed.
Yeah.
So was any of this 2008 work done?
None of the construction was done, just design.
Okay, so that hence the big number, but there's money left in the account from the other.
The original appropriation was, I believe, $200,000. The total, so we're looking for the additional $150,000, which will cover the construction estimate you see there, contingency, and design.
Okay, so there's money existing.
Yes.
You want to add to.
Exactly.
Okay.
Any other questions? Motion?
I'll move.
Whatever.
So, Mr. Chairman. So we're moving the full 315, or are we going to discuss the other two as well?
Well, the 315.
We're talking about Fed Center was 150, then the others.
Well, he's looking for 315.
Right.
Yeah, does anybody have questions on Burr?
Well, maybe if you could just touch base on what they are, it'll be helpful.
Pretty much similar.
Same thing.
Same thing? All right. So I apologize.
Oh, that's right. No. What I was referring to about decreasing the generator size,
right, okay.
And you know,
on all of them.
Yes, on all of them. The only one, not the Ed Center. The only ones that we're really looking to maintain full size generators will be City Hall, the Ed Center, North and South because of shelters, police and fire.
Okay. All the others will be smaller.
Okay, you're all right, Scott?
Smart.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Anybody else or any other questions? All in favor? I guess we took a big vote, didn't we?
No.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. 377-11, Ron of the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend the sum of $200,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding electrical upgrades in various schools.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So, as part of HMFH's study in the schools, they determined that the electrical infrastructure needed some attention. So this is kind of the beginning of that process. We're going to be going out and addressing, starting with the schools that need the attention the most, and then specifically the areas within those schools that need the attention the most. The one thing I want to make sure that everybody understands, we are not going through and saying, we're just going to replace the electrical in this school. The conduit is fine in many cases. The electrical runs themselves are fine. The outlets are fine. But it doesn't mean that your junction boxes, your breaker panels, your service to the building is adequate. So that's what we're really looking to do. Countryside is a perfect example. And I took some pictures. I think I showed them to you last time. I could show them again if you'd like. But, we have situation at Countryside where we have water infiltration around the conduit where the emergency generator line comes into the building. It pours down over the panel. It's a little scary. The panel is watertight because it's a relatively recent addition, but as history shows, water and electricity is not good, and eventually it's going to cause a detrimental effect. So we want to address that. Not to mention, operationally, you know, having a pond in the basement is not fun. Countryside's got enough water as it is, so we want to address that. In addition to that, when you go into the building, there's a lot of panels that are really at or beyond their useful life that we really need to go in and take care of. What happens to electrical panels when they get old, it's not that they create this horribly unsafe condition, but they trip more often. So it impacts the operations. It also decreases the integrity of the breaker, because breakers are designed to trip, but only so many times. They're not designed to cycle back and forth. They're not a light switch. We've also, one of the areas that we want to tackle, or that we will tackle in this, is the electrical components in the boiler room itself. There's a lot of corrosion that's occurred down there as a result of the water issues. But I just want to make sure everybody understands that as part of this boiler project, we're addressing the sump pumps down there. So the goal is to, knock on wood, prevent water from ever causing an issue down there again. But also as part of this project, we're working with our controls contractor to do an alarm system that will go back to the building operator, myself, and whomever else, to notify us if there's a failure so that we can catch this before it becomes catastrophic. So I just want to make sure everybody understood that, you know, we're not throwing good money after bad. So Memorial Spalding, same thing. We've got a lot of panels that are aging. The other thing that a lot of this pertains to is that as infrastructure expands in these buildings, you know, electricians, whether they're contractors or in-house electricians, add additional outlets here and there. We put window air conditioners in here. We do whatever we do, but we increase the electrical demand, and these panels aren't balanced. So you may have, you may have 10% of the load on this breaker and, you know, 60% of load on this breaker. So as part of this, what we're going to be doing is balancing these loads. It puts less wear and tear on the equipment. It also makes it a safer situation. And it also allows for increased infrastructure expansion in the future. Which leads into Franklin School, where this one, we may actually have to look at an increased service. We've had issues where we're just kind of getting at capacity. When you get to some of these schools where the service was installed many, many years ago, for a relatively low electrical demand, and you get into a situation now where you have a higher electrical demand, we may in fact have to increase that service. We won't really know until we can get in there and meter each one of these panels and determine if we can simply balance the panels or not. But it looks like we'll do a service increase there as well.
Questions? Yes, Dick.
Thanks. So, Josh, this one seems like it could expand to me. Because, here we're working with an improved and more detailed HMFH study than what we had before, but you still have to do the design work, and so the numbers are more rounded than some of the other numbers.
Yeah.
How confident are you that, two questions. One is, what would be the intention toward completeness? What would you define as a complete job? What are the aspects of the electrical work that you absolutely want to get, and the second would be, how confident are you in the completeness of the HMFH survey?
Well, the HMFH survey, and in talking with Lori from HMFH, the intent was really to identify current conditions of the systems, but they did not go into great detail. It's not like we can take that survey and put it out on the street. We're going to have to get an electrical engineer to come in,
right.
And this will answer your first question, and that is that we'll bring an electrical engineer in. We'll meet with operations, we'll walk through the building, and really what we want to impress upon them is we don't want to replace stuff just for the sake of replacing it, but we want to address those issues that are either beyond useful life, in a potentially unsafe condition, or at or near their capacity. So completeness I identify as having a safe system that has capacity for expandability and is functional and in useful life. So, again, we're not going to be tackling conduit and you know, outlets and light switches. But once we have that and we're in a good place, I would consider that complete. And then we'll move on to the next school. So to answer the question of is this enough, it's hard to really tell what is enough. But what I am sure of is that it's a work in progress. So we're going to have to, this will be a multi-phase as you roll through the buildings, electrical improvements in each one of them.
So you're not going to take the number and work up to the number. You have a goal in mind, and this number could become $300,000.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. No, we're, again, it's not a band-aid approach. I'd rather get one school done right, and if we got to come back and do another school, then we'll come back and do another school.
Sure.
On the numbers, it says the cost estimates are based on previous electrical upgrades. When was the last time we did an electrical upgrade in the school?
Well, again, because these are individual panels, we're doing a panel count. We've done panel replacements as a maintenance function, but we've never done, 15 panel replacements as a maintenance function. So we have a ballpark idea as to what a service upgrade would cost. We have a ballpark idea as to what an electrical incoming feed will cost us. So there's a lot of different things that go into that.
I'm just wondering when the last time, how old the numbers are over here.
Well, I was actually one of the ones that we're looking at is the Ward School that we're doing right now. So,
okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Move approval.
Second. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I didn't know that.
Very good. Well, I guess that concludes you, George.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Great job.
Thank you very much.
Now, we got this 385.07. I don't know if we're going to get in this or what we should do with it.
Well, I think the money's going to make it.
Thank you.
Keep it open because we're going to get a financial update. I believe in this.
You want to keep it the way it is?
He wants to give a financial update, and you're also going to need an update in the spring for the fields.
Yeah. We can take it up when he gets here.
No, we could, I suppose.
I don't think
he doesn't have anything tonight.
We don't have the information yet.
I see. I'll move hold then.
Hold, all in favor, hold. Okay. Next. Now. This is 208.08. All the Gentiles, Sangiolo, Salvucci, and Schnipp are requesting a discussion on establishing a permanent building committee in the city of Newton. I don't know about this. I think that, Stephanie, would you please describe what you described a little earlier? And come to the table, please.
Perfectly. Let me drop in my hand. Thank you. So, both of the next two items, actually.
They're pretty much in
here. They're related. So one talks about establishing a permanent building committee. The other one looks at the 558 process, design review. So I don't know if all of you are aware, but there are working groups being formed to address some of these issues and the capital planning and project process that will address a lot of these issues and will come back with recommendations to improve that process. The building committee piece, now who was it that sponsored that was? Right, okay. So, as part of that discussion, I think there will be a recommendation that comes back whether or not it makes sense to have a building committee. We have the design review committee, we have now working groups working on the Anger School project. So it will all be part of the same discussion around improving the capital project planning process and streamlining the process. That was the information that I just wanted to be able to share with you, that the working groups are going to be moving forward.
So I know there's a 558 committee because Deb and I are both going to be on that, mm-hmm. And I know there's a... The building committee, I think, is different because the capital improvement committee is the one that's monitoring the database. And then there's the Anger committee that's looking at Anger. But I don't think with the 558 committee, I'm not sure what its charge is because it hasn't met.
Uh-huh.
But I think the reason, the context for these things was obviously the high school, which produced some chaos and confusion and some old systems that needed to be upgraded in terms of processes and procedures. And I'm just not sure that the scope of the committees, the way they've been described, will, for instance, touch on the issue of whether there should be a building committee or not.
So the goal of that capital planning process streamlining committee is really to look at the 558 process, design review committee, designer selection committee. I think it's sort of all part of the same.
So it's broader than just 558.
Well, 558 is what's in your docket item. But when you look at sort of what what is on the agenda for that committee, it'll be looking at the whole project process, capital project process.
Okay. Okay. So we haven't seen the agenda for that committee yet, so that's unknown to us.
Sure. Well, I only just wanted to add, as the individual who appointed the two aldermen to that committee, I think as I explained to both of you, that, you know, the details given to me were a little vague as well. So I was, you know, trying to do my best in understanding who would, you know, work best within that, you know, light framework that I got. So personally, what I would suggest is, you know, not so much on 20808 on the building committee, but in terms of 25307, I understand that it sounds like that, I think, that, you know, it's more capital project process streamlining and incorporated 558. I personally would want to ensure that because of this docket item, that at a minimum, as part of those discussions, these five things are at least, you know, brought by you two guys to that committee, say these are things that we're, you know, interested in knowing about and fixing or improving. Mm-hmm. And I would use this docket item as the conduit to come back to this committee to give an update or brief, you know, strongly suggest that 25307 is at least held until that group gets up and going. And I'm very confident that Alderman Albright and Alderman Crossley will bring, you know, these issues forward to that working group, you know, and report back to us on how those things are working. Or maybe there's something in here that we physically, you know, or literally can't do or things like that. You'd be able to at least tell us that. On 20808, I don't know if Amy was coming down. I know she mentioned she was interested.
She's more interested in the 25307.
All right. Okay. And again, I don't, as far as establishing a permanent building committee, I'm interested in the idea. I just don't know what the docketers had in mind, you know, when they had put this forward. So,
well, as you can see, it was quite a while ago.
Right. Right. But I think it's an interesting idea. I just would want to, you know, understand a little more about it.
Following on that, yeah. I think that Item B under 25307 really could incorporate the possibility of a permanent building committee, if that's what...
No, B is different.
It's different?
B has to do with the liaison committee that we formed.
Okay. All right. So maybe there's not something in 25307.
It really isn't.
Okay.
And if I may, what's interesting about this idea of a building committee is, as part of the ANGER process, the MSBA requires us to have a school building committee. Now that's for that particular project, and it has to have representation from aldermen, from, you know, city staff in various departments, the executive department, residents who have knowledge in, you know, either architecture or construction. It's actually a very broad-based committee. So it might be interesting to see, as that committee gets established, it might, you know,
be required.
This is part of the MSBA process. We have to...
but it wasn't, I'm just saying, before.
I believe this is new.
Yeah, but the concept is different in this
one. Yeah.
Mark, you're right. Well, a couple. It strikes me that the committee the mayor appointed for ANGER was to look at funding for the ANGER project,
right.
Not a building committee for ANGER. And so that strikes me as a completely different issue.
It's two different things combined into one working group. That's why.
That's fine.
Again, as it was explained to me, if I may, Mr. Chairman, explained to me was there would be one committee that sort of had two components. So that's why I thought Alderman Fuller would be a good representative as someone who's on the finance committee who could be part of the alternative funding piece of that. And then from what I understood, that the ANGER piece was more on the ongoing construction and, you know, issues that they have relating to ANGER. And that's why I thought the ward alderman from that area might be a good person. That's how it was explained to me.
No issue, but at least what I heard publicly was this is a committee to talk about funding for that project.
It is two-part in the sense that we're also navigating the MSBA process. It's a very structured process, and it's very complex.
So,
and one piece, so part of us, part of that committee is focused on just navigating the MFP process.
But you're saying that this
at the same time as
requirement for a committee
yep.
for a particular project is a new requirement of the MSBA?
I don't know when it became a requirement of MSBA.
We've done...
It actually is. You're right.
There's probably a lot of things here because of us.
It is a school building committee, and there's a format. It says exactly we need a representative from the CFO, someone from the executive office, someone from the, city representative, someone from the building department, someone with a MCCPO, the procurement. Very specific.
This is before my time now, so my time's been rather short, but it strikes me that a building committee is different
Absolutely.
Concept
yeah.
than a committee that comes together for a specific project, which is what this committee is. And so,
I think it was the intent here was for any construction
yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
down the road. That's
right.
I mean, we don't ever want to be in a position where we get so far behind in our capital planning, and the thought was that if we had a group of town fathers and mothers, so to speak, who were looking after the buildings that as an outside group, that we could stay on top of it and have a group shepherding our buildings along. That was the idea of a building committee.
It seems like partly covered here under public facilities, partly covered under design review because that's also looking at it.
It's really different, though.
No,
it's really
right.
very different.
Right.
It would be more along the lines of we have an energy commission,
mm-hmm.
we have a conservation commission,
right.
but we don't have a building commission.
More
in the
proactive
same way.
Group that's really looking forward, looking planning and.
I'm just trying to understand how it might tie into it.
I think other
than the CIB. Shauna said she did a little bit of research on whether there are other towns.
They all have school building committees.
School building committees, because you're now required to have them.
If they have a design review and designer selection, they don't have a building committee.
Huh. They used to have
town. There was one place that had one building committee with no design review.
Uh-huh.
So our design review committee functions as a...
Actually, as
equivalent.
They're more or less
not the same. I know they're not the
they're
same.
They're more or less doing the work.
They don't do planning. They do review.
Right.
I think it's duplication myself.
Maybe it shouldn't be a building committee, but something else.
Yes.
Because I think the building committee is defined differently in every city and town.
Right.
And then there's also a working group that's doing the CIP, which is looking at long-range planning.
Deb, you had a question?
Well, yeah, I had a comment and then maybe go back to this building committee idea. So two things. The comment goes back to all these various committees that the mayor has just established, and seems to me that each one requires a job description. Now, I know we haven't met in ours yet, but I have heard from folks who have met in theirs, and it might be nice to have a short document that very specifically lays out the charge of each one of these for all of us to review, especially in public facilities where, whatever those committees are doing is going to matter to us. So to understand...
Nice to have one ahead to appoint you.
Yeah. And I mean, it shouldn't be a whole very difficult to put together, because imagine you have to know that by the time you have your first meeting, right? So the other thing is that it strikes me, I think of the library process. Now, I was new in Newton when the library was finally agreed to, but that there was a very healthy process that involved citizens as well as this committee that were consistent. There was continuity throughout the project, and those folks got really deeply involved. Of course, it involved some of the library trustees and so forth, and I just happened to know that Florence Rubin was extremely involved in it, which is how I know most of the information I have about that process. And we haven't had something like that since. We didn't have it for Newton North High School.
Which is why the docket items are
right. Got it. Okay. So it might not be that we want a permanent building commission or committee for the city that doesn't change from project to project, but you might have one for a very large project. Not that we're ever going to do another Newton North High School, but
that's why
I don't know. But let me just finish. So the thought is, I think, as you said it from the beginning, whatever happens with this is really intricately connected to whatever happens with the 558 process as a whole, and does need to be considered as a whole. I think that at least one of these items, or an item, ought to be held in this committee. I agree with that. Doesn't have to be two separate items, but I think that has to be separate from what the 558 group is doing.
And maybe it's just, so there were multiple versions of the names of those groups, and so maybe now it's out there as the 558 group, because I have, maybe it's on a previous version, it's been talked about as the capital project streamlining process, so it's looking at it more broadly than just 558 in my mind.
Okay.
Okay, Shauna just came up with a good idea. I think maybe if we NAN this and incorporate this as A, B, C, E, F into that 253.07.
But we will hold the other one.
Hold 253.07.
Until we get the air from this committee.
Yeah, great.
They're going to have to incorporate a lot of this stuff into what they...
No, it's great. That's what I think we should do. Yeah.
All right, so do I have a motion in the end, 208?
So moved.
Yeah. All right. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Do we need a motion to amend?
We've got to amend the other one, yeah. Amended to insert.
208.08.
208.08. All right. Shauna, you got it? Okay, all in favor of the insertion, number one, number six, and to hold it. Oh, six, okay, good. All right, next.
Chairman's
now.
Do we have one more? Oh, PSNT. Oh, right.
152.06. You all done, I guess. No, you going to stay for the other? No.
Just noticed you
he's right out in the hall. Oh, Josh, you mean?
Yes.
152.06, PSNT committee request and discussion. Road classification design types as outlined by the Planning Development Department for future use as an overall management tool for the city. Road classification, I don't understand what this
we
is.
We never
all
about. Finished this one.
We had, yeah, is there a...
This is 1906. Why are we even discussing this thing?
We had road classification. We did one thing, but this was the second one. The first chance was deciding what is an arterial, like a major arterial, so that we did.
That's right.
This is the second part, correct?
Yes. We were all supposed to go back and look at the classification and see if we wanted it to do anything different. That's what I recall.
Right.
If we liked all the way the streets were classified.
So what's your pleasure with this one?
What?
It's a complicated process about this. It is attached. The report from that meeting is attached.
Yeah.
Okay, but
not the classification.
No.
Okay. Did we ever have it, or was it a presentation?
I mean, it was a
presentation. He presented.
So I think this needs to be held. What?
Yeah, the Transportation Advisory Committee is working on revising the design classification. So David thinks that may take some time, and it will most likely be different than what was presented before.
Should we
hold this
or NAN it?
That's NAN it either way.
Why don't
we NAN it?
I agree.
So can I just ask on that, though? So if we NAN this, is it the understanding that the TAC will then go to PS&T and make a new presentation, and then PS&T would come here again? Is that what we're
doing? Yeah, they'll have to redock at the IRA.
Because I honestly think that, you know, some sort of classification like this is a useful tool, and I only say that, like, for instance, Alderman Salvucci's item that we've been talking about, your item that we've been talking about recently, about things protruding out into the street. We're talking about, you know, it should be done in this type of classification and not. So I think we need some sort of system. That's what the reason why I'm asking the question.
Well, we do have a system. So this, the notion of, we have what I don't know if it was formally adopted, but we have the system that was put in place after the comp plan was done that the Transportation Department
different.
Is using.
This is different from that.
Yeah,
wouldn't be an amendment of that?
No, it was a different kind of classification.
The first one was a functional road classification that was approved by PS&T and PIA. This was the second piece of it, which would be the design for, say, the roadway going through a village square.
Okay.
All right, so we're NAN, right?
We'll NAN up, and they will come, have to come back.
Okay. I'll move NAN.
We had a vote, didn't we?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think we voted.
I thought we voted NAN.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So that concludes our meeting, except for all the discussion. Yeah, we'll get all the information.
We have a discussion item, which is to introduce water and sewer.
Okay, we won't get dinner yet.
Oops. I have these, and I have these little Altoids peppermint, and I have these little chocolate things.
Chocolate things sound good.
Okay. Actually, Cheryl, as you were sniffling over there, I wondered if you wanted a peppermint Altoid. He's going to suffer.
You're getting worse.
Home get some rest.
Sure, you got
sleep, is, sleep is the best. Well, sure.
I don't know. This might take a little crack. I don't feel good.
I took three.
Excellent.
How are you doing here,
buddy?
Hello. Hello.
Well, so we're kind of in between items right here. So that's why.
I didn't know you had a little
turtleneck. I have one. I don't know if we can do so.
What is it saying?
I don't know why you're giving it to me.
You got one at Devin, didn't you?
I have one, yeah. Thank you. I'd like to
just a little bit of background. Back in June, the mayor's office set up a committee, if you will, to essentially plan for the CIP for water, sewer, and stormwater. And Deb and Dan sat on the committee with us. Dave was on it. Bob Rudy, Luther Verona, Ted Jergy. We basically came up with we met basically every week from June to the end of November. So we put a lot of hard work into this. This is really just an overview, a brief overview. We plan to come back to the board, the full board, with the entire presentation, which is still being tweaked as we speak today. But we wanted to just give a brief overview of what we've been concentrating on and just summarize some of our thoughts and what brought us here. So this is a brief slideshow. Basically, water, sewer, we're going to start with the sewer system. And everybody knows our biggest issue, inflow and infiltration. The amount of money we pay to the MWRA is really, inflated based on the amount of inflow and infiltration we have in our system. We have some sewer overflows, which some of you know about Alliance Field. We have not a lot. We have backups during extreme weather events, not included in the Quinn Road area. And also, we have an infrastructure that the vast majority of it is basically was installed prior to 1845. So this is what, just real quickly, I know most of you know what inflow and infiltration is. Infiltration is basically groundwater. When the groundwater raises during the spring and fall months, there are flaws in the piping system and in the manholes that basically get into the sewer system. Inflow is more of a basically tied to a rain event. There may be a catch basin that might be tied into the sanitary sewer, just back when they put the catch basin in, that was the only pipe to tie it into. So that's more tied to a rain event. The infiltration more is a long type of system tied with the elevation of the water table. So as you can see, we get these every year from the MWRA. I kind of highlighted these. Roughly about 43.4% infiltration, 17. Roughly about 60% of our flow that goes to MWRA is clean water. The tune of roughly about $10 million a year that we spend, we pay the MWRA to treat this clean water. So we're looking as, this is money well spent that we can basically bring those numbers down and get some payback as far as our assessments. As you can see here, this is basically a cross-section of a road. We have a sewer pipe, you've got the drain pipe, you've got the water pipe. These cracks you see in the pipe and the manhole are infiltration sources. Here we may have a catch basin that may have been put in that at the time there was no drain line or something to tie in. So the different sources that contribute to both inflow and infiltration. These are just some samples of that. So, What we're trying to target is the removal of infloating infiltrations to improve our performance.
Thank you.
You bet. As far as reducing amount of backups, amount of overflows in the system, reduce any sort of repairs that we have to, or emergency situations we have to respond for backups. Put some update our aging infrastructure, and again, really try to mitigate the end-of-the rate increases. One of the other things that's sort of a side note is that with our 12 or so pump stations we have, the more inflow, the more flow, the more energy used in having to pump the sewage. So our energy costs also will be reduced by reducing inflow and infiltration. How we decide on anything else is, well, how do you pick the first place to start? What's the basis? What we've done is we come up with a four-tiered system that basically says that we got information from the MWRA. There are 7 MWRA meters that basically are on the perimeter of Newton that measure the flow exiting Newton. Each one of those meters also, they're able to tell us how much of that flow is inflow and infiltration. Okay, so that was the first criteria. We basically targeted the spots that have the higher amounts of inflow and infiltration. The next parameter was underdrains. Now, I know most of you know what underdrains are, but underdrains were basically a perforated pipe system that was put in place prior to the sewer to lower the water table so that they could put the sewer in basically in a dry situation. So rather than in the days back in the 1800s, or the late 1800s, early 1900s, when they didn't really pump or dewater using pumps, they used these underdrain systems that would tie in and lower the groundwater to a water body, let's say, and then they basically would put the sewer pipe on top of it, probably about 18 inches above it. But what they would do is they would make actual connections between the two in order that they could flush these underdrains for whatever reason. So there's a drain connection there. And I believe roughly less about 40% of the sewers in Newton have underdrain systems. Pipe material age, that was the third criteria, basically the age of the pipe. And then fourth was we queried our Hanson maintenance system and basically saw where we have most of our issues where we have to respond to emergency situations.
What do you do with the underdrain areas? Do you
we basically separate them.
Just
so we sever those connections, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so, presentation.
So basically what the benefit is basically, again, reducing sanitary sewer overflows, which is a health issue, rehabilitate some of the older pipes that we have in the system, which, again, the majority of it is basically the early part of the 1900s. Reduce inflow and infiltration, again, which will ultimately reduce our assessment and also save on energy costs. So that's basically what we were looking at as far as...
Hold on just a minute. You have a question here, Mark?
I did, and it related to the cost issue. You said there was about a $10 million a year cost due to infiltration inflow.
Correct.
If we could fix all these things, I presume there's always some infiltration and inflow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What level do you get down to?
Well, that's a very good question. our attempt is to deal with... There's public infiltration and inflow, and then there's private infiltration. We're basically going to target, our program is going to target all of the public inflow and infiltration. How much, when I say private inflow and infiltration, for instance, when someone has a sewer service that goes from their house to the street, there's really no way to quantify or investigate how many cracks are in that pipe or how flawed that pipe is or to quantify how much infiltration is coming in that pipe. So the best we can do is to target all the public inflow and infiltration.
Any idea, though, if we could, I'm just trying to quantify, because that's a large number, and you can sell people on why you
right.
need to do stuff if you can say you're going to save them a lot of money per year.
Right.
So how much of a savings do you think you could realize if you could magically wave a wand and fix your public infiltration inflow?
Well, again, that's the answer to the million-dollar question.
Or maybe
and again, to quantify that amount is extremely difficult because a lot it's basically weather-dependent as well. In other words, it may vary year to year as far as how high the water table is. But we have run different scenarios as far as we've charted. And again, I didn't want to get into too much detail with this presentation, but
sure,
in the future presentation, we will actually show charts of past work that we've done and what we've seen as far as the drop in inflow and infiltration after these drops were completed.
Hold on, I'll just in a minute.
I wanted to clarify a small point, and I realize we're having this overview to begin to whet our appetite for the larger presentation, which is about, which will eventually lead into what we're doing in our CIP or a proposal for our CIP, but a comprehensive strategic plan to reduce I&I does include some strategies for getting at the private inflow in particular and infiltration.
After the public inflow and infiltration has been dealt with.
Well, we have the inflow program right now, for example.
So there's
wanted to make the point that there's multiple pieces to this whole dilemma.
So we've done some I&I work over the past, 10 years? We've done a little bit of I&I work?
Yeah, we've done some.
Some? Mm-hmm. I know, well, there was a surcharge on our water bills years ago that was supposed to go for this, and this was back when Bob was commissioner. Is Bob here?
That's stormwater.
Was it a stormwater? I don't know what.
Stormwater.
Okay, it was the stormwater.
That's totally different.
That's hard.
All right. So have we? So in the I&I work that we've done, have you seen any difference in the years that we've done it? Have you seen any difference?
Yes.
So, do you know what that is, or maybe you'll tell us?
Right. Yeah. Again, look, we have slides that show graphs that show basically how much our inflow and infiltration has gone down after we spent X amount of dollars in these.
Okay, so that'll be good to see.
Yes.
These are great questions, and keep asking them. We will. I know we're answering the ROI, and answering what have we done in the past, and what has the impact been. But I think the more questions that you can come up with, by luck, we have thought those through, and we'll have some response. But we may not. If you may have questions that we haven't thought of yet, so keep asking. Make sure that we've got ask the questions so that we can be sure to answer them a couple months from now.
I think the other question is your question about do we have any sense for what proportion is public?
That was my question.
Yeah.
And can we look at if we spent $10 million and it went down 2%, and we did it 10 miles, can we extrapolate and figure out how much is now going to be left over that's going to be assumed to be private?
One of the things you'll see, but not tonight, is how the department has been able to map the entire city into these different districts that drain to one of the 7 meters. So and then you saw that there's this tiered process for determining what areas are in the worst shape and to go after those first, but that the idea will be to consolidate to a great degree where the work would happen so that in the first several years you would actually be able to get readings that would make sense against the investment that you made. So there is, as Ruth Ann said, an ROI analysis that is being done. There are other things that factor into, you know, why you should do this, but which are also economic but maybe more difficult to quantify, like the fact that we just spent or we're spending $2.5 million this fiscal year to correct for egregious situations because we're so far behind. We have spent a lot of money since 1993 using MWRA loans and grants, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to the size of the problem.
How far might we be from getting a sense of the ROI?
We've thought it through. I think the idea tonight was to tell you what's coming shortly to see if there are other questions that we should be sure to be answering. So stay tuned. We're not far. But the answer is not as specific, by the way. Okay. Just to...
Okay, but do we have answers to the questions? How much have we spent in the past 10 years, how many miles have we done, and what percentage has it gone down? Can we get the answer to that?
Yes, we have that.
That'll all come.
And you'll see it.
This is just a preliminary to the main event.
Because that's a really interesting fact to know. That's what I want to know.
He's got it.
You'll get
it.
I feel like that's a teaser.
Stay tuned. That's the, we're going to a break. I've got 17 slides here. I mean, I think we're up to about 120 slides on the full presentation.
120 slides, we'll need a whole day.
Yeah.
We're talking two minutes of the whole. Isn't it one night?
No, that's it. These are just sort of the overview slides that we pulled out of each section.
It's a lot.
Any more questions on the sewer?
Maybe too much.
Yeah. All right. Water system. Okay. Just some background information, roughly about 318 miles of water main. About half of that is unlined cast iron pipe. What the unlined cast iron pipe, if you're not familiar with it, is basically it's bare metal. When the minerals in the water system tend to bind to those, and they grow and basically they close off the water main. So which is a water quality issue, a water volume issue. On average, you know, Newton consumes about 10 million gallons per day. If you would basically spread it over the course of the year. Our oldest pipes date back to 1876, and the size of pipes range from anywhere between 2 inches up to 20 inches. Okay. One of the things that we instituted last year was to have someone, a consultant, come in and basically update our water distribution model. The model hadn't been updated in, I believe, 15 years, and even that, when the last time it was updated, it didn't have the most standard views was basically from the 1980s. So we've actually updated the water model to basically include everything we've done up to 2011. So we haven't got a finalization of that. This is one of the things we're waiting for to finalize the presentation. But we basically we're there as far as what we foresee as recommendations. But basically, the water model looks at a few different things. Any sort of growth, water demand impacts, say for the next 10 to 15 years. Again, identifying improvements benefits from the past improvements that we had done over the last 10 to 15 years. Deficiencies and fire flows, which is a huge one. Basically, what you do is we've actually went out there and flowed some hydrants. And what we do is we get some rates and we use those. There were probably maybe 30, 40 hydrants citywide, and we calibrate the model based on those flows from the hydrants. And then we also had them look at storage and supply requirements, which I'll touch on a little bit later, and essentially just develop a long-term capital improvement. You know, where do we start? Where do we start? What's the best place to start year one? So, biggest issue was ISO or fire flow capacity and piping. You know, where are the deficiencies? That was priority number one. Priority number two was that unlined cast iron pipe. What we do is we basically have used a lot of NWRA money to clean and line some of the older cast iron pipes that we've done for the last, I believe it was probably 1997 when they instituted the program. And then also I have them look at, we have two storage tanks that were basically built to provide fire flow in certain areas of the city. They're very small, relatively speaking. They don't contribute to the actual pressure of the system or the hydraulic grade line of the system, but they were put to basically subsidize any sort of fire flow during a fire event. We're right at the break point where, you know, do we decide whether we need to spend $600,000 per tank to rehab it, to repaint it, and seal it, or do we take some of that money and upgrade some of the water lines in the system to make them basically render them that they're not needed anymore? And that's the tack we're going with. That's the that's sort of the priority we're going with, is that for a much less money, we can actually update some of the piping systems in that area and basically do away with the two tanks, which are, again, going to cost $600,000.
Which tanks are you talking about? The line?
Winchester and Stanton. One on Winchester Street, Stanford.
Okay. So what about the one on Country Club Road?
The one on Over Road, the hillside. Yeah, no, that's basic. Well, that's contributing to the hydraulic grade line. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the hydraulic grade line. Just real quickly, is basically the height of the tank and the height of the wire is what's creating the pressure in the system. And so you have this, and you have the hillside tank, you have the Walnut Hill Reservoir creating the pressure. Then you have the smaller tanks basically below the hydraulic grade line that only kick on when there's a drop in pressure. There's an altitude valve that basically lets them contribute to the system. But what issues you can probably foresee is that the water is stagnant in there.
Right.
It sometimes gets septic. It's a maintenance issue. We have to go up and actually turn the tanks over and chlorinate them in the event they ever do open up. So it's a maintenance issue. It's a lot of money to maintain them. We're thinking it's better to sink money in infrastructure and then maybe, you know, do away with them. So.
Are you saying hydraulic grade one?
Yes.
And that's the level?
That's the level of the water in the tanks relative to the rest of the city. And that's what creates the pressure. And again, we have to coordinate that with you as well. We try to, the last thing you want to do is pave a road and not dig up the water. So.
Of course, we do so little road work.
So.
Really? I mean,
that's
we can't.
Highway.
That was all right. That was all right.
So, real quick, brief any questions on the water system? Okay, stormwater. Just some background on stormwater. Yeah, 320 miles of drain pipe, just under 13,000 catch basins. Back in 2006, I forget who the public works for us, but we established a stormwater.
That's the one I guess that I mean.
Basically, it's a flat fee, all residents pay $25, all commercial properties pay $150. We have 155 major outfalls, or basically discharges from street drainage that outfall or discharge into the Charles River that have to be tested periodically as per the EPA. And we got roughly about 7 miles of streams throughout the city. Okay, one of the things we're looking at is reevaluating the stormwater fee structure. Right now, every resident pays the same, every commercial property pays the same. So basically, if you look at the Chestnut Square Mall or the Atrium Mall or some of these larger developments, they're paying $150. And you've got these little, small, postage stamp, barbershop, beauty salon, whatever, that's on maybe a couple thousand square feet of area. They're paying $150. What we're trying to do is look at it. Basically, right now, the residents make up the bulk majority of the fees we collect for the stormwater system. What we're looking to do is just revamp it slightly so that the larger developments that have a lot of the impervious cover and contribute to a lot of the issues that we have with the drainage pay their fair share. So that's what we're looking at as far as tying their fee towards the amount of impervious cover they have on their site. You get to put some equity into it. Okay. We intend to get the next cycle of the NPDES permit, which is non-point source discharge and elimination system.
Say that again,
non-point discharge elimination.
Okay.
That basically EPA is that goes back to the outfalls that we go to the Charles. There are issues, and then they're going to rewind back to the underdrain systems that we have under the sewers. Not only were they contributing clean water to the sewers, but when there's a backup, the sewage goes into the underdrains, and then where does it end up? It ends up into the Charles River. So it's sort of a benefit, a win-win with that, with the infiltration, with sealing those up, because you're keeping the clean water out of the sewer, and you're keeping the sewer out of the water body. So. They're coming out with a phase two. They've sort of given us some idea of what we need to do, more over than what we're doing now. But right now we have to test 25% of those 155 outfalls each year and sample them, test them, send them to a lab. And then when there's an issue with fecal coliform or that sort of thing, we have to chase it down and investigate where it's coming from. So it's a lot of work. And this next permit is actually going to go to set the bar even higher. We're dealing with phosphorus control plan, which basically is fertilizers, emissions from cars, and that sort of thing. So that's what, again, this permit isn't out yet, but again, it just means dollars is what I'm getting at.
I just have one question. How much do we have in the budget for that right now?
Well, I mean, for what?
For this process.
Right now, our stormwater utility account collects roughly about $700,000 a year. Very small.
So there's nothing specifically.
No, there's a small portion of that. I mean, when you get into just regular operation and maintenance, salaries, and that sort of thing, there's not a lot left over to do capital work.
So there's nothing specific in the budget for this.
No. But that's why we're looking at.
We have to do it.
Right. That's why we're looking at. We're sort of accompanying that with reevaluating the stormwater fee to see if we can maybe generate more funds to do this.
And this is a self-funding.
Yes.
It's supposed to be.
But not yet.
So when you talk about phosphorus control, isn't that going to impact what our citizens are doing? And so that may require some changes?
Outreach or public education, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We also have to update our stormwater management plan, which basically, it sort of sets everything, all the goals we want to achieve as a city. The last, I think the date of the most recent one is 1997, I believe. So as part of the new Phase 2 NIPI permit, they're requiring cities and towns to basically get an up-to-date stormwater management. And then, we've never really done a long-term CIP for stormwater, where we've done it for sewer, we've done it for water historically. We've never really done one for stormwater, so we'd like to try to do that with some in the future. And I believe that's about it.
Any more questions or discussion on this? Well, this is just a preliminary to the big boss.
This is the trailer?
Yeah, the trailer. Right.
That's good.
Fred, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess that's it. We're adjourned at...
Motion's adjourned.
9:10. All in favor of adjournment?
Nice job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Before you guys
want
to
take
off.
Yeah, it's right.
No, I was just going to ask them about, you know, we're
going to
start talking about... Oh, sorry.
So, you want to start
it? Yeah. It's very interesting. I want to see the return to investment
question.
Critical to tell me why do I do this you know, where we should start talking about, you know, if we're going to do a community of the whole on this,
maybe that.
Whatever, all I'm saying is, you saw from my weeklies, you know, we got meetings going out to budget season now. It's like, we're going to figure out where this is all going to play in.
Budget's coming in.
So,
what, maybe I should ask Fred and Dan this question. No problem. How many weeks do you think we're out from actually having the presentation ready?
I realize my question, for example, out of order.
But I was going to say, if we split them, we might be able to do sewer first.
Sewer one, water,
a little bit behind.
Yeah.
We pour a lot of money.
My only thought is do what we do there. We should come up with a guesstimation as to when that
really?
Would be.
Do you think
right? And then we should start to talk about agenda, because you want to get it out there so people understand what it is we're talking about, what we're going to, you know what I mean? So I just want to see how that incorporates between now and the end of budget season, because, you know, so we have town hall meetings, we've got four aldermen working sessions, so we're going to have budget, you know, our budget season kicks in.